Welcome back to Forum. I'm Penny Nelson in for Mina Kim. In 2012, the bottled water industry produced about 10 billion gallons of bottled water, and consumers forked over $12 billion for it. Bottled water's popularity is on the rise. But in California, the practices of bottled water companies have been under scrutiny in recent months as the state grapples with a historic drought. In March, this Desert Sun newspaper reported that Nestle was bottling water from a Southern California national forest, the San Bernardino Forest. Since then, environmentalists have been protesting the company, demanding it stop using the state's precious groundwater during a drought. This half hour will focus on social and environmental impacts of the bottled water industry. And joining us, we have two guests. We've got Tim Brown with us. He's the chairman, CEO, and president of Nestle Waters North America. Good morning.
Good morning.
And also with us is Adam Scow. He's the California director of Food and Water Watch, which is a Washington, D.C.-based environmental advocacy group. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Well, I wanted to start with that Southern California situation that has been in the news of late. And in particular, I think one of the issues that is this is not in particular a drought show, so we're not really talking about the drought per se. But because of the drought, I think the bottled water issue has come up quite a lot. And one of the things that I think has really come to the fore is the fact that Nestle and bottled water is being pulled out of national forest and out of what is considered public lands. And this at a time when streams are being depleted and trickles of water where there used to be rushing water. So I would like, if you would, Tim Brown, for you to explain the relationship there, explain how it came to be that a major corporation was working with a national forest and was in national forest land, working with them, pulling water out, and what that relationship was and how you're still in there, even though my understanding is that the permit is long expired and that relationship has seemingly kind of been over.
Sure. Happy to do that. For starters, actually, that water's been being harvested since 1894. So actually, the source predates the existence of the U.S. Forest Service, which is 1906. The actual permit in question is for the pipeline, not exactly the source of water. The permit is under review. It's actually not expired. So directly from the U.S. Forest Service, we've been notified that our permit is in full force and effect for the existence of this pipeline. But this source that is owned by the Arrowhead Mountain Spring Water Company since 1894 has been delivering water to people in California for 120 years.
Okay, but so the relationship, you say, goes way back, but Nestle itself wasn't, pulling water and bottling it 100 years ago. So this relationship that you've got now, why are you, of all the places you could be, why are you in the San Bernardino National Forest right now in 2015 extracting water from creeks? You know, I've seen video where you're pulling, the pipes are above the ground, mm-hmm. and the creeks are trickling, and sometimes the water's being diverted. So why there now? And even though you say it's under review, the permit, it's 20-some years since the permit's expired.
Yeah, and to give you some perspective, it's a slow process. We're a bit frustrated with the process. There's 3,000 permits under review for the U.S. Forest Service, 300 in this region alone. So we're one of a large number of permits that are up for review. And there's been an extremely long administrative backlog. As it relates to your other question, Nestle bought the Arrowhead Spring Water Company in 1992, and with it, its sources and assets and customers, et cetera. And again, spring water originated. I don't know if you've been up in that region, but there was the old Arrowhead Resort. And people originally around the turn of that century would go to the resort, as many other places around the world, to actually, because of the water and a place of gathering around the water. When you go look at the area, and I have been up there quite recently, one thing you have to appreciate is, especially in dry periods, it's an arid region. But under the ground flows an enormous amount of water. And that's pretty typical of mountainous regions, that there's underwater aquifers. It's when they reach the surface that we call it spring water. And by FDA definition, spring water is water that starts under the ground and comes to the surface. So this is a longstanding business. It's a longstanding source for the people in the region. And it's been enjoyed and been a source of thirst quenching and also hydration for again, 120 years.
All right, Adam Scow, why don't you weigh in on why your organization is taking issue with Nestle being up there?
Sure, and just a little perspective on bottling water in California. There's over 100 plants estimated to be bottling about 700 million gallons to a billion gallons. That's just the water that ends up in the containers. And there's very little protection from the state of California regarding groundwater and water bottling. We've tried to pass legislation forcing the bottlers to disclose the volume and source of the water they are bottling. We have not been successful. Governor Schwarzenegger vetoed those bills a few years ago. And so right now, much of the data we get is either from the companies themselves, sometimes we can't verify what they're saying, or local water agencies. So I know with Nestle, they have about 5 bottled water facilities in California, 2 in the San Bernardino region, 1 in Los Angeles, 1 in Livermore, and 1 in Sacramento. That has also been a focus of scrutiny, where local citizens there are concerned that while they are being asked to make reductions in their water use, Nestle is taking 50 to 80 million gallons of their local water supply at a very cheap price for private profit. So there's an unfairness there that people are questioning. Largely from our state government, that's whose job it is to regulate and ensure that our state's waters are put to beneficial uses. And many of our members and our allies are questioning whether Nestle bottling our water for private profit is really a beneficial use, especially in the drought.
Well, and the drought keeps coming up, and I know that one of the things that piqued my interest in doing this show is I've been hearing from people about, oh, the bottled water industry and the drought, and it doesn't make sense. And so I know that the producers of this show reached out to several people, several science experts, and Peter Glick in particular, who we've had on the show in the past, who's a bottled water skeptic, somebody who wrote a book called Bottled and Sold, The Story Behind Our Obsession with Bottled Water. And the producers talked to several people about whether or not bottled water was a big issue in the drought, and we decided, in fact, that this show itself would not be part of our drought series because the response was that actually the bottled water issue itself was a small part of the overall drought issue. And I want to, in fact, read what Peter Glick wrote in response to that question. He wrote, there are many, many serious problems with bottled water, but in the context of the drought, I think the bottled water issue is a real distraction and a small issue compared to agriculture, environmental risks, the Delta, urban challenges, lawns, Central Valley politics, fisheries, the governor's plans, water rights, etc. It's easy to vilify bottled water because of all its truly serious problems, but the amount of water bottled here is tiny and hence the relevance to the drought is small. So by way of just explaining to listeners, we're addressing bottled water and pulling water from California is the topic, but not in the context of the drought series. But Adam, I want to ask you, do you agree with that statement?
Well, yes and no. On a state, certainly we want to look at a statewide perspective. Bottled water is a small percentage. But really, and the proper way to evaluate the impacts is at the local level, watershed by watershed. That is how we're going to fix our water problems in California. I think the lack of scrutiny and legislation over bottled water highlights a bigger policy problem that is impacting all of our water management and the drought, and that is the lack of groundwater protection in California. California is one of the last states, if not the last state in the West, that has no protection of groundwater as a public resource. In many places, it is private property, and if you happen to have groundwater underneath you, you can pump as much as you want. And that is very dangerous, especially in the drought, because historically, nature has a relationship where surface water, precipitation, replenishes groundwater. If we continue to pump faster and faster without regard for our changing precipitation patterns, we are in danger of depleting our groundwater. And so with bottled water, this could be true at a local level where you see one of the plants Nestle has near Cabazon. You have the Coachella Valley Aquifer there slowly being overdrafted. Overdrafting means when we're pumping it out faster than nature can replenish. So that is really how we have to evaluate the impacts.
Talking this hour about the bottled water industry, and with us is the CEO of Nestle Waters, and also with us is Adam Scow, who is with the advocacy group.
Food and Water Watch.
Food and Waters Watch. Yeah, Food and Water Watch. And if you'd like to join in the conversation, 866-733-6786 is the number to call. We've only got a half hour, so go ahead and give us a buzz right away if you're inclined to join the conversation, or send us an email at forum@kqed.org. Once again, 866-733-6786. And I got to say, Tim Brown, I thought it was interesting when you were saying, you know, that the groundwater flowing beneath these mountains, and I thought, flowed, you know, flowed. That's one of the key issues that we're wrestling with. Yeah. So Tim Brown, why, you know, Nestle is a profitable, very successful company. Why California? You know, in 92, you invested in Arrowhead. You know, 92, and it was known to be a dry state then. There's a lot of states in this big, wide country of ours. Why California? Why not a lot of water-rich states?
Well, first off, I just want to agree with Adam on the need for groundwater legislation. We support that. And I think it's by effective groundwater legislation, we can have the information and the transparency that everybody needs to merit these discussions. So we're fully in support of any proposed groundwater legislation, or especially that which will bring greater oversight and greater information to the conversation. You know, to answer your question, why actually bottled water sort of started here in California. California was always a trendsetter, right? Especially, and people, I think, were gravitated to bottled water, especially in its early stages for health reasons. And people have been weaning themselves off soft drinks and going back to other beverages, especially bottled water. And so California set the pace. So when Nestle bought Arrowhead, actually was working for Arrowhead before Nestle bought the company. Again, it's this historic 120-year-old brand, and you want to celebrate and keep that commitment because people want it, and they continue to want it. Californians, as you mentioned in your opening, are consuming bottled water actually at an increasing rate.
But why not take the lead in civic responsibility and move away from an area that's so parched?
Well, we actually think that it is a good civic responsibility to provide hydration and bottled water to the public. Bottled water, we strongly feel, is a very efficient delivery vehicle for water. And water in general needs to be consumed more frequently. Around 2000, we maxed out as a society in the U.S. in drinking carbonated soft drinks at about 50 gallons per person per year.
I can hear what you're saying with all of that. But what about nobody's going to argue that water is not a good drink for people to be consuming over soft drinks, but there's a lot of controversy over what the former larger CEO said around, that water is not a human right. Why don't you go ahead and address the elephant in the room here?
Yeah, I would really like to because I believe that quote's taken grossly out of context.
Okay, why don't you address that? Because that's the thing everybody.
And Peter Brabeck, our chairman, has on numerous occasions and in print expressly said we believe water's a human right. The official Nestle position, again, in writing, is that we believe in water as a human right. Mm-hmm. So that's a bit of a misnomer. What Peter's been trying to do, as part of the UN global CEO mandate on water and water scarcity, actually Peter's been trying to bring attention around the world to the crisis of water scarcity. And in greater context of the discussion, what Peter's talking about is we use about 1.5% of fresh water for human needs, either hydration, consumption, or hygiene. That leaves 98.5% of the fresh water that is, without any cost attached to it, can be used in various ways. And what Peter's suggesting is we move forward in a water scarce world, that we're going to need some solutions to manage the water systems around the world. And I believe people have taken that a bit out of context with the idea that in some way, shape, or form, Nestle would want to control or privatize water. And that couldn't be further from the truth. We don't see our role in society that way. We're a food company that produces food and beverages. But we're really worried about the scarcity of water, not just in California, but all over the globe. And with an increasing population and climate change, we're going to need some better systems for people to access water and use it wisely.
All right, let's go to some of the callers who are weighing in. We've got Russ calling us from Cloverdale. Good morning.
Hi, it's Russ, and I am calling from Cloverdale. I'm on the road. The comment I wanted to make, short and sweet, was that a couple of years, maybe a few years ago, Nestle tried to set up a bottling plant in the Shasta area, but they were turned down because their idea in the past has been the slant drill, which not only took water from the farmers, but from private residents, and they were called on it. There's been some shady things to go on. And just to let you know, Peter, I don't know if you remember the Taster's Choice Instant Coffee Man, almost 10 years ago. Well, that was me. So I know what Nestle does. And hey, keep up the so-so reputation. I'll take the answer off the air.
All right. Thanks for the call. I believe that was in McLeod. Adam, why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, there was a proposal. Nestle wanted to build one of the largest water bottling facilities in the country on the base of Mount Shasta in a little town called McLeod. It was extremely controversial. A citizen group named the McLeod Watershed Council led the battle. Nestle purchased the land where they wanted to build the plant from the old timber company that had closed down. And after 4 or 5 years of battle, my understanding is Nestle decided to build the plant in Sacramento. There's a lot less opposition. They cut a deal with the city council and the mayor there to bottle Pure Life, their tap water brand. Remember, 40% of bottled water is tap water. My understanding, however, is that Nestle still owns that land, but I'm not sure what their plans are.
Nestle? Tim Brown? Did you say I just called you Nestle?
Well, that's good. And you didn't call me Peter because my name's Tim. I'd really like to discuss this because, yes, we do own land in McLeod. Yes, we did start an exploratory process to site a plant there. And we followed a very public process in that. Where things, I think the story diverges, and I was, again, still with the company at that point. One, we made a decision before anything was final that economically we couldn't operate out of there. It was just too many miles from populous areas. 20% of our costs in doing business is transportation. And for us to be economically viable, it's really difficult to ship water outside of about a 200, 250-mile radius. So, yeah, we were concerned about quantity of water and secured that source, and we did start the permitting process. What happened, though, after we abandoned plans is the debate continued. And it was a very visible and vocal debate with many stakeholders in the area and people coming from far away to weigh in. And we thought at best, let's just let that debate play out, even though we did not have intention to build and don't have intention to build now. And actually, the Sacramento plant was for a different purpose because Nestle Pure Life is a processed drinking water. And what we try to do is bottle that as close as we can to a particular populous area because it doesn't depend on spring water.
And when you're saying that, basically you're saying tap water.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not that different other than it goes through an extensive quality control process. It goes through reverse osmosis, which it takes everything out of the water. And then we put minerals back in. There is differences, but there's similarities as well.
Right. So, Adam Scow, I want to ask you, I mean, this is the conundrum. The market is going up for bottled water. The demand is there. And as you say, 40% of bottled water is essentially tap water. And what does one do? A corporation can't be faulted for meeting a demand. So what does one do when, what does one do when a company is meeting a demand, people are buying a product that is essentially free, can come out of a tap, and is pulling water out of streams, and yet everybody knows that it's essentially tap water. What kind of actions, I think Campaign Courage has launched this huge online campaign to get the industry stopped. And yet people keep buying it. What kind of efforts can be made? What kind of advocacy work can be done to stop something where the demand is so high?
Well, I think we need a couple of different fronts here. Certainly public education is important about bottled water and its impacts on the environment. Over 50 million barrels of oil are used nationwide to make all the plastic itself. Most of that ends up in landfills. It's not recycled on trails, lakes, streams. We have a problem with that. We have a need to reinvest in our public water infrastructure. A lot of our pipes are getting very old, and it'll take billions of dollars in public investment to rebuild, replace everything that was invested in 80, 100 years ago, which laid the foundation not only for our health but for the economy.
Why not be campaigning government to be overseeing? Why are our forest lands being used? Why not be – I mean, when there's no government oversight and when all of this is sort of more easily directed at government and infrastructure than at a public that seems to have a demand, it's so confusing.
Well, a lot of the public is waking up about these problems, and I agree with you that the responsibility does lie with the government. Certainly, corporations are trying to make as much money as possible. Nestle is one of the largest companies in the world. That is their business model. Our job, our government's job and our governor's job and the state water board's job is to manage and protect our water resources. There is a market for it, but that does not make it okay. There's got to be limits. It has to be done responsibly. We see this with certain agricultural practices as well, where groundwater is being massively depleted. And indeed, the defense is, well, there's a market for it. Well, we're going to shoot ourselves in the foot if we deplete our groundwater. So really, the responsibility here lies with Governor Brown and the State Water Board to protect groundwater.
All right, let's go to some of the emails. We've got a listener writing, what about all the environmental impacts the plastic is causing, which is what Adam just addressed with the petroleum-based plastic? With California reducing the use of plastic bags, I'd guess bottles are next. Any thoughts on your company's understanding of the impacts on plastic bottles and plans to change the containers to something like aluminum or glass for less impact? What about that?
Yeah, and we're excited about that. So for the last 2 years, we've been using 50% recycled material in our Arrowhead brand. We really believe that that is one of the better long-term solutions to have a closed loop, a circular economy, not just on plastic, but on many materials. And we're pretty proud to sort of lead the way here, especially in this area. We have more recycled content in our plastic bottles than any other plastic bottles in the marketplace. So we're leading the category, leading the beverage industry in what I think is ultimately a really important solution, which is again a closed loop and using reuse and the idea of recycled material.
Another listener writing, the big issue here is that bottled water is a complete hoax. There are few regulations, particularly when crossing state lines, which make it less safe than tap water. Consumers concerned about the safety and contents of the water would be better off purchasing a purification system. And here's another one saying bottled water is a huge carbon footprint. We have one of the safest, most reliable water supplies in the world here. It's a capitalist myth that this is not a case to sell you something you don't need and hurts the ailing planet. Although on the other side, this Clyde writes, activists paid for by Big Ag are fighting Nestle. 80% of water is used by Big Ag. This is a diversion like the almond diversion to get you to avert your eyes to the producers of agriculture for meat and milk production. All right. So what do you say to that, Adam? No?
Well, you know, and we are in a drought, and so it's important that we're paying attention to all these issues and want to ensure that all of our, water uses are being put to beneficial use. So understandably, everybody has their favorite whipping boy, if you will. But we have to look at these things both holistically and at the local level. So many of our water rights in California are oversubscribed, meaning we've overpromised what nature can actually deliver. Again, I agree with you. This is a role for government to figure out. But when we have a government getting cozy with certain interests, then we have a problem. So really, it's on us, citizens, membership groups like Food and Water Watch, to put pressure on the governor and local government as well.
All right. Well, that's it for this hour. Tim Brown, Chairman and CEO and President of Nestle Waters North America. Thanks for being with us. Also, Adam Scow, California Director of Food and Water Watch, a Washington, D.C.-based environmental advocacy group. And Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Lauerberg, and Susan Britton. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement editor is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our interns are Nunu Tayo and Megan Sussman. I'm Penny Nelson in for Mina Kim. Thanks to all of our callers for joining us and our email writers as well. And stay with us for the next hour. We'll be talking about medical and recreational marijuana. Recreational marijuana may be coming to California if voters approve it in 2016. And we'll be talking about policy changes that may be coming with that as well. Stay with us for the next hour. I'm Penny Nelson, and you're listening to Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegas Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.